I'm Tavis Smiley. We thank Adolph Reed, Professor Emeritus at UPenn, for that amazing conversation. It's been a great show so far, these first 2 hours, and this last hour promises to be no less interesting. In this hour, two conversations on the B side of this hour, director J.J. Anderson on her new documentary, Sacred Soil, the Piney Woods School Story, about this historically black boarding school in Mississippi. I've been there a few times, spoken there a couple of times to the students. It is quite an amazing institution, and now there's a documentary about the Piney Woods School in Mississippi. So we'll talk about that doc with its director, J.J. Anderson, again on the back side of this hour. We commence this final hour today, though, with neuroscientist and author Dr. Sharon Ranganath discussing when forgetting is normal and when it is worrisome. I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Ranganath to this program. How are you, Doc?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It's my great delight to have you on. Thank you for the time. Let me just jump in and make the most of these 30 minutes or so that we have. I'm always curious as to the backstory of any of my guests, for that matter. Tell me how this became your lane, how this became your field of interest and study.
Well, there's so many ways I can answer that. I guess the shortest answer I could give you is that I did my training in clinical psychology, and so during my training, what I found was that a lot of virtually anyone who came in for cognitive testing, meaning somebody who is being tested to see, hey, do I have brain damage? They were always telling me they had memory problems, but it didn't have to be an actual person, let's say in the early stages of Alzheimer's. It could be somebody who had had a head injury or somebody who had major depressive disorder. And so that really attuned me to the importance of memory, because no matter what, it affected memory. And when it affected memory, it affected people's ability to function.
Yep.
And so that's one of the reasons. Of course, I have a bunch of personal reasons probably too, but I can get into that if you want.
No, please. I mean, that's the sweet spot for me. We all, if we are fortunate, find our way at some point in our lives to really engaging our work and witness, as I call it. You don't look for a job. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you're trying to find your vocation, your calling. Why are you here? What is it that you are endowed and blessed to do better than just about everybody else? So it's that personal stuff that really is the sweet spot for me. So personally, tell me why. And then I got questions about my memory and the memory of my listeners right about now.
All right. Okay. Well, I can give you a bigger answer, which is why I got interested in psychology and neuroscience.
Sure.
Which is, you know, I grew up in San Jose in the 70s, and the neighborhood I grew up in was incredibly racist, to say the least. And I was one of a very, very small number of brown people in the neighborhood. And it was around the time of like the Iran hostage situation. And so anyone who is remotely associated with something that could be racistly identified as the Middle East, you had problems to deal with, you know. And adding to that, you know, my teacher said that I had ADHD and I would get into fights with people. And, you know, I just had a lot of, I did great in school in terms of my grades, but I just always had these issues of being seen as an outsider and feeling like the world around me didn't make sense. Mm. And so even though my parents had really pushed me, you got to go into engineering, it just didn't fit for me. Solving other people's problems just didn't seem like something I cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And once I kind of got into the mind and I started to learn about how everybody has these weird things that make them irrational, whether it's biases and stereotypes or whether it's just misconceptions about how the way the mind works, it's like, that gave me kind of an appreciation, and I think I was able to benefit from being able to look at people as a somewhat of an outsider as opposed to somebody who's kind of like stuck in their own way of thinking about things.
Yeah. See, I'm glad I asked that question. I would not have known that part about your backstory had I not asked that question. And that sets up the rest of this conversation, because now I know where I'm going. And here's where I want to go first. When you got into this field, born of your own experiences and trying to understand people better and the ways in which they maltreated you growing up and what you could learn about how our brain functions, The first thing I want to say to you is that I could read that as an excuse, that because each of us has this weird stuff to paraphrase what you said, going on in our brain, which means the brain's connected to the heart, because we have this weird stuff going on. I could use that as an excuse, or people who maltreated you as a child in San Diego could use that as an excuse for their behavior. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's, I guess what I would say is that I never want to, like, nullify people's stories.
Right.
But I guess what I would say is that memory is ultimately part of our self based on the stories we tell about our past. And so those stories are based on a perspective, and those stories are based on interpretations, and those interpretations are open to change. And I think people don't realize just how much people change in their personality over time and their selves over time based on the memories that they accumulate. And so I think a big part of what I did in my clinical training was really encouraging people to view their past from alternate perspectives, which really freed them and gave them more options, I think, than they would have thought they had. So again, you know, I don't want to tell anyone, here's how you should look at your past. I never did. In my clinical work, but it was more of just giving people an outside perspective and giving them a chance to just update their memories or change their relationship with their past.
I've been doing this for a while, and I may not be the best at it. I am pretty good, though. I may not be the best at it, but I've learned over the years to never sleep on the backstory. Don't sleep on the backstory. It's always the backstory that I find most interesting about why people do what they do and how they got into the spaces that they occupy. And now that I understand that, which is instructive and informative, let's move forward. When we come forward, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Ranganath and talk specifically about why I want him on the program, and that is our memories and forgetting. So we are told that forgetting is normal. We'll let him unpack that when we come forward. Forgetting is normal, but there is a moment when we start forgetting stuff that crosses the line into worrisome. Where is that line? You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
This is getting good.
Yeah, man.
Tavis Smiley, continues when we come forward. He's rooting for everybody black.
Everybody black.
More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
More of Tavis Smiley and Dr. Chan Ranganath. Dr. Ranganath, you'll appreciate hearing this, I think. I have a really, really, really smart national audience, and obviously some of your fans are listening right about now. I apparently said San Diego, and you grew up in San Jose, and they corrected me quickly. So if I said San Diego, I meant San Jose. All these sands here in California, literally and figuratively. And so your fans started emailing me right away, correcting me on what I said. So if I said San Diego, forgive me, I meant San Jose. But you'll be happy to know that your fans wanted me to know that I got that wrong. So that said,
oh my God, I had no idea I had fans. Now this is like, pressure is on.
Yeah, no pressure. You've already written the book, The Pressure's Off, and the book is called Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. And so forgetting, as I said earlier, forgetting is normal, right? I mean, I get concerned sometimes and I can't recall certain things, but tell me when I should get alarmed, and please tell me that forgetting some things is normal.
Oh, forgetting things is absolutely normal. And in fact, it's been known ever since people started to study memory that everyone forgets. And most of the details of what we experience in any given day will be forgotten within 48 hours, the majority of those details.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that we forget everything, but we forget a lot. Now, even the things that we form memories for, the events that we form memories for, we don't necessarily have the ability to access them when we need them. Mm-hmm. And that's something that really increases as we get older, right? So, you know, I know you're very young, but maybe some of your listeners are over the age of, basically anyone over the age of 30, what you start to see is an increase as you get older in that inability to remember what you need when you need it. So you go, oh, I know this person's name, but I just can't come up with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not at all worrisome. And it means that you have a memory there in the first place. I think where you'd be starting to be concerned would be, it's not that you can't remember the details of a conversation, but you can't remember that you had a conversation at all.
Yeah.
Or if you find yourself getting lost very easily, especially in places that you didn't used to do this, and now there's a big change. So those are some of the things that I might worry about. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the time people worry about memory. It's a symptom of the fact that they have pretty good memory in the first place, that they're able to catch these problems.
Let me just throw some things at you. I'm working my way deeper into your book here, Why We Remember. But I wonder, when you said a moment ago that that people over their 30s start to experience this, they forget a certain name, forget this, that, or the other. My view is, and I can be totally wrong, you're the expert, I'm not, so you tell me. My view is that these smart devices that we rely on to store everything are not aiding and abetting us when it comes to our memory. There are times when I just am annoyed with myself because I can't remember X, Y, or Z. The reason why I can't remember is because it's at the touch of my phone. And so I've never really committed it to memory because I didn't have to. But I have people in my life who mean a great deal to me. And if I lost my phone, I swear to you, I could not get in touch with them. And they're close to me because I haven't committed their number to memory. I'm not sure that these smart devices are aiding and abetting us with our memory. If I'm in left field, please tell me, Dr. Ranganath.
Well, maybe I'll cheerfully amend that.
Okay. So, I like that phrase, cheerfully amend. I love it. I receive it already if it starts with cheerfully amend. Give it to me.
All right. Sounds good. So basically, we have, I think that there's a school of thought with memory that if you don't use it, you will lose it.
Right.
And my feeling is that as far as we know, people are always using memory, whether you're trying to or not. But the question is whether you're trying to. And so, for instance, I'm all for, you know, I mean, if you're in bad shape when you lose your phone, I'm in absolutely horrible shape because I just depend on it for appointments. I depend on it for phone numbers. I depend on it for email addresses. So, and I'm perfectly happy to outsource a lot of my memories to these devices.
Yeah.
Where I think we get into problems is that the devices take away from our experiences in life and they give us an impoverished memory. So what I mean by this is, let's say, ever since I got a phone, I don't know about you, Tavis, but right. Ever since I got a phone that's a smartphone, I now feel like I have to check email all the time. And I do check email all the time. I can't tolerate a second of boredom. And so what happens is obviously if we were having this conversation now and I hadn't put my phone on focus mode and I got a little beep from my phone, that would put me in the mindset of, oh, I got to check email because I got an alert. Now, in that moment, I've already changed the topic of what I'm thinking about. And to switch back, it's going to require some effort on my part.
Mm.
So already I'm behind in the conversation just because my thoughts flipped to something else. Even if I don't get this alert, just from this bad habit that I have, I'm always switching back and forth. And so that's giving me these little fragments of memories. Because when we switch, what happens is that's when our brain, at least in my lab, we've shown this, that's when our brain seems to preferentially form these memories.
Mm.
But if you're switching constantly, you're getting little fragments of memories as opposed to one coherent conversation. So the two things that happen are, one is you don't remember the conversation because you were never mentally there in the first place because you're always catching up. And the second is your memory is just a bunch of little bits of the conversation. And you don't have the whole thing to be able to integrate it.
Mm.
So that's one way. And we can talk about other things like when people go to concerts and they're like, they have their phones up and trying to record videos, for instance, of a concert and try to augment their memory. I mean, that's like another thing, which is that these phones, the ability to record our experiences, people in research will tell you, yeah, I'm going to remember this better because I'm taking a video.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely not true. In most cases, it takes away from your memory. I described an incident in the book where I talked about my daughter's birthday parties as an example of this. And, you know, but the short version of this is, if you're taking videos in this mindless way to document everything, you can think about all the Instagram walls you run into in LA as a good example of this. This is not actually giving you the details that you need to remember something on your own. It's not prompting you to actually focus on the information that you need to give you a sharp memory that will come up the next time you're in that place.
Yeah.
And likewise, if you're in a concert and you're taking a video, you have a document of what happened, but you don't have the document of having experienced it. And that experience is your emotions, you know, being connected, that feeling of connectedness with the artist, that feeling of being there with your friends and so forth. And that's what you want to remember. If I just want to listen to the artist, I can just put on their song, right? Or go to YouTube and check out someone else's recording.
Yeah.
But if I want to remember it, I have to have a document of the specific instance where I was there. I want to take a picture of my friend.
Yeah.
Or I want to take a picture, little video of the artist engaging with the audience, not just record the performance.
Yeah. Dr. Ranganath is much more smooth than I am. I'm a lot more crass. But I think what he just said.
Oh, that's not true.
No, let me just interpret. I think what he just said was the next time you go to dinner, put down your phone, stop taking pictures of your food, and just enjoy the meal. You remember it better. The next time you go to a concert, stop trying to video everything. Just get into the vibe of what you're hearing and what you're feeling, and that memory will last you longer. That's my way of interpreting what I thought he just said. But when I think of forgetfulness when it comes to me, and I'm sure others who are listening right now have the same experience, it's one thing for me, Dr. Ranganath, to not remember when I was in Cape Town a few years ago, the name of the person I met who was my tour guide, and I'm trying to recall his name to recommend him to somebody. It's one thing to forget that from a few years ago. But it's another thing, which will happen later today, trust and believe. Somebody will ask me later today, because it happens every day, when I move around the city and move around the country, somebody asked me, who was on your show today? And it was just hours ago. I cannot tell you. Because I do this 3 hours every day. I cannot tell you who my guest was in the first hour or the second half or the second hour. I don't remember. I do the show. I'm in the moment. I remember the experience of it, but I can't recall quickly the names of all the guests I had on that show that very day. So is there a difference between forgetting short-term and forgetting long-term?
Well, yeah. So what I would say is that that forgetting can be within an hour or it can be within days. I mean, so in this sense, all it is basically once you leave the studio, let's say,
right,
your mindset completely changes. And that mindset is part of the memory. So sometimes to find that memory, you literally have to put your mind back in that place and reimagine, hey, what was I doing when I was back in the studio? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden that information can come to mind. But that requires time, it's effortful, and it's harder to do as you get older. So yeah, that kind of stuff happens, and it can happen at any time. We can have things that we absolutely know we've called upon 100 times, and that can still happen. Yeah. And it can happen not only with memories, but just with words or names of things that aren't even really unique memories, but just information that we want to have.
We talked a moment ago about the way memory connects to the experiences that we have, whether we're at a concert.
As busy as you.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, say it again. Say it. What's your last part? I missed that last part.
I'll just say, for someone as busy as you, for instance, and I think many of your listeners have complicated lives with kids and with jobs and so forth, that the stresses of daily life can really interfere with your ability to find that information when you need it. Because it basically, when you're under stress, it just shuts down your ability to kind of control memory.
Yeah.
And so memory becomes kind of random as opposed to something that's a resource that you can rely upon you need it.
That makes sense. I'm watching my clock here. I got 5 minutes left with you. I could do this for a whole hour if I had the time. Uh-huh. But let me do this. Let me do this though. We talked a moment ago, Dr. Ranganath, about the way that memory connects to the experiences that we have. But talk to me about the connection between memory and how we learn, memory and how we make decisions.
Well, so let's start with how we learn, right? So memory affects us in terms of our ability to, so one thing that we know from memory research, for instance, is that you learn best when you're actually struggling, right? So if a kid's struggling in school, but they're really trying and they're getting good instruction, that's when they're learning the most, right? Not mm-hmm. when somebody is actually coasting through school and getting straight A's. They're not necessarily learning anything. I think this is a big problem that we have in education, is that we don't teach kids either the skills that they need to learn based on memory science, or we don't really teach people in a way that promotes constant learning. We teach people that's emphasizing mastery. And so that's something I've become kind of passionate about since writing the book.
Right.
The second question that you had was about, sorry, I forgot.
I was waiting for that. Now, I asked about the connection of memory to how we learn and how we make decisions.
Oh, yeah, how we make decisions. So one of the interesting things that's been shown in a number of studies by people who study decision making is that you don't make decisions based on how much your experience or something, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you go on a vacation. You're spending all this time in airport security and baggage claim, in lines with the car rental place and so forth. And so when you decide next time you want to take a vacation, you don't factor all that stuff in. What you factor in is how much fun you had with your family.
Mm-hmm.
And so your memory is incomplete, but the memory that you have that's incomplete is what you use to guide your decisions.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? Because essentially all we're left in life is memories. And so you can make decisions based on the kinds of good memories you want to take away. I think where there's problems is when people are unaware of it, there's all sorts of biases and stereotypes that can creep into memory. Somebody just has a random story that they've seen about somebody who took a vaccine and got sick, and then they just assume vaccines will make you sick, as opposed to just being able to say, this is just one memory I have of something that I might have read, but it might have been something I just heard from a random person on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
And so these are the kinds of memory errors that can influence decisions.
Yep. Is it the case, I want to pivot just quickly here in the few minutes I have left here for this one or two other questions I want to ask. But the first is this. Is it just that we're hearing more about Alzheimer's and dementia, or is it the case that as a species, our memories are failing us more?
Well, there's a bunch of different theories of that. I guess one fact is that we have an aging population.
Mm-hmm.
That is, more and more of us are aging or older, above the age of, let's say, 65. And so as a result, we're hearing more about it because people are living long enough, and there's many more people who've had Alzheimer's. So, for instance, I would defy anyone to mention that they know no one or have no connection to anyone who has Alzheimer's. I think everyone's been affected in some way or another.
Yep. Nope, I think you're right about that. I think this is the exit question, and this is the reason you wrote the book. Is the title of the book. His name is Sharon Ranganath, Dr. Ranganath. The book is called, a best-selling book, New York Times best-selling text, called Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. Since you wrote the book and so titled it, in short, why do we remember? What's the value of memory?
Memory is not about the past. Memory is about the present and the future. If you just close your eyes and you ask, where am I right now? You're using memory. If you ask yourself, what day is it? You're using memory. If you ask yourself, what do I want to do next? Where do I want to go for lunch? You're using memory. And so I'd really encourage people to think about that, because I think you want memory to be a resource that you can use, but you don't want it to be in the driver's seat in your life.
Yeah. If I told you how to spell his name, you would not remember it, because it's not easy to spell. So I won't tell you how to spell his name, because you're going to forget it anyway. I will tell you, and hope that you won't forget, the name of his book. It's a New York Times bestseller. Everybody's talking about it, and I've been waiting to get him on the program, and he squeezed out 30 minutes for me, for which I am grateful. The book is called Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. Don't forget it, Why We Remember. Dr. Ranganath, thank you for your work and your witness. You're doing great work in that lab, man. I'm honored to have had the chance to talk to you, sir.
Oh, no, I'm honored to get a chance to talk to you and your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.